So it's Question Box Sunday. Question Box Sunday is a bit of a favourite, I think, for some people, and where they can ask any question they want, and I'll give them any answer that I want. it's a good time. Any time you want a question, pop it in the box, and when we come to Question Box Sunday, we'll have it. We're always very careful and respectful of the questions. Always trying to be mindful that people are trying to serve us and trying to think a bit deeper and a bit clearer. Today's questions probably goes for the record for the longest one. We have one question, and it was typed out, lovely, wonderful typing. I don't know who asked it, but let me read it through firstly. I'm going to break it down, okay? So let me just wash this one over you for a moment. Gee, it looks full up there, doesn't it? There are Christians who believe that the Muslim Allah is the same as the God of the Bible, and they only have the wrong information about him. But in 1 John 4, 2-3, we read, "This is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges Jesus Christ as come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming and even now is already in the world." My question is, how should we start talking to Muslims about the gospel without immediately upsetting and antagonising them? Okay? Now, this is, reminds me of something I was at college, and I'm going to ask JJ whether it's his assignment is going to be when he's back next. This is a good question for many reasons. It tries to understand faith and religion of others through the light of the scriptures. I love that. When we come to anything, we need to shine the light of the scriptures on it. It assumes that we should be sharing the gospel message with Muslim people. What a great assumption. That is just wonderful. And to put the cherry on top, there is a desire to do it carefully and lovingly. That is wonderful. It's a complex question. We can give it some time. I said it's the only question we have. There are a few points of the question where there may be some difference in understanding, that the question recognises. It starts with, there are Christians who believe. So there are Christians who do not believe. So there's a bit of uncertainty there amongst... not all Christians would agree. As the question was anonymous, I couldn't ask the person directly, but I'm going to break it down to three questions, okay? We always come back to three questions, don't we, Question Box Sunday? And here's our three questions. Let me break it down. Is the Muslim Allah the same as the God of the Bible? Does a good understanding of 1 John 4, 2-3 support this? How can we lovingly engage Muslims with the gospel message? I hope you'd agree that it's staying true to the question. So the first question is the Muslim Allah the same as the God of the Bible? And we need to just clarify some terms that we often hear but often don't understand fully. First is the difference between Islam and Muslim. If I say it slowly, you'll hear that there's sort of a root word there. Islam, Muslim. You hear the slum? That's the root word. It changes. Just like in English, we talk about we assume, presume, and consume. We change the start. What we have with the two words Islam and Muslim is a change in the start. Slum means submission. Okay? WikiIslam.net, which has to be authority because it's got Islam in it. WikiIslam.net says very clearly that Islam, in Hebrew, we might think it's more to do with peace, but it's very clearly not. It means submission. So Islam is submission to God. It's the name of the religion. A Muslim is someone who follows Islam. So Islam is the name of the religion. Muslim is someone who follows that religion, someone who is a submitter. Allah is the Greek word for God. Now, I looked up what the French word for God was, and I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, and Bob's looking very frightened here. Dieu. Thank you. I looked up the Hungarian word for God, and let me have a go before you correct me, John. Isten? Is that the Hungarian word for God?
Isten.
Isten. Italian is Dio.
Dio.
Okay. Chinese is Xian. Well, one of. I went to the simple Chinese. Okay. Mandarin. I hope you're not having a go at Mandarin speakers. The Christian Arabic speakers call God Allah. Okay, so the word Allah is God. The question is asking, is the Islamic God and the Christian God the same God? With just the wrong information. I couldn't help but going firstly to Romans 1:18, which tells us that our basic human sinful condition, human beings do not seek God. We do not seek God. We suppress the truth. Because we go our own way, we reject God's rightful rule over our lives. We live our lives running from the true God and not seeking the truth of God. I do not believe the religions of the world are attempts to know the true God. I think they're attempts to run away from God. And the reason that we have almost every culture some sort of a religious system is that we cannot deny the fact that there must be some sort of creator, some God who's created. And inside us we have this inbuilt need to worship something bigger than us. And so Romans tells us that we don't hunger for God, we, in a natural sense, we suppress the truth. And the only way that changes is if God touches our lives to hear and accept the truth. That's not because you and I are smarter or better than anyone else, but somehow within the God's plan, God's purposes, that he does this. Now, Muhammad was born in Mecca, which is the modern day Saudi Arabia, who was born in an influential family. His mother and father died quite young. At 25, he married a rich widow and managed her affairs as a trader. As Mecca was in the trade route, he was exposed to many ideas and many religions, including Judaism and Christianity. Muhammad was about 40 when he had what he first thought was mad hallucinations. His wife encouraged him to embrace those hallucinations as revelations from God. I don't believe those were divine revelations of God. I think that Muhammad was influenced by Christianity and Jewish religion. I think he was influenced by those other religions. And that the Quran, which is the Holy Scriptures, reflects this. When they talk about the triune God, they talk about the Father, Son and Mary. Which shows that there's been some sort of influence, wrong influence, but certainly there in the Quran. But then I go to things like John chapter 14 verses 8 to 11. Let me read this to you. You remember the story. Philip said, "Lord, show us the Father and that will be enough for us." What's Jesus' answer? Jesus answered, "Don't you know me?" Have you got that? So he says to Jesus, "Show me the Father." And he says, "Don't you know me? Philip, even after I've been among you so long, anyone who's seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I'm in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I say to you are not my own. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. I believe that when I say... Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the miracles themselves." So to see God and see Jesus, they are distinct, but we see the same God. So anyone who denies Jesus does not know the true God. I've tried to do a bit of parable for you. This is a parable. Can you imagine two girls talking about their latest interest? One says, I met a guy named Peter at university last week. The other says, well, hey, I met a guy named Peter at university too. My Peter is tall and blonde. Hang on. My Peter is tall and blonde too. Did you meet him in the library? Yes, I met him in the library. My Peter is studying engineering. My Peter is studying engineering too. At this point, the girls are getting a bit anxious. They think that this Peter mightn't be as nice as they thought he was. One might say, well, I'm going to meet him at noon today. Stay with me. We'll confront him together. Then there's all these people come through the library door. They're looking frantically. One says, look, there he is. The other one says, where? Over there near the bookshelf, the group of people. Oh, I can't see him. Come with me. They march over, they spin this guy around, and one girl says to the Peter, I think you might know my friend. Her friend might say, actually, no, that's not my Peter. Sometimes we use words with that Islamic people and Christian people talk about the same God. It looks like we're talking about the same God. We use the same words to describe that God. There are some similar characteristics. There are similar ways of describing. And some might think it is actually the same God. But when we come to look at the face of God, when we see Jesus, and we say, look, there is God, the Muslim person will say, where? I can't see him. So I do believe that the Muslim God and the Christian God are different. But let's get on to the second question, which should be up there. Does a good understanding of 1 John chapter 4, verses 2 to 3 support this? The Apostle John was one of Jesus' 12 disciples, very important in the church, early church, as you can imagine. It's why they accepted that John lived to be very old, that he lived long enough to see errors form in the church. He saw what Jesus warned them about, that false teachers would come and that the sheep would be ravaged by people who come like wolves. John was important to the church because he was probably the last remaining disciple. He was a physical link between Jesus and them. Letters had been written, the letters, the Gospels probably had been written, but they hadn't come together in their present form. And that's why John was so clear in his statement in the very first verses of his first letter, 1 John 1. Let me read it to you. That which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at, and with our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, we've seen it, and testified to it. We proclaim to you eternal life, which was with the Father, has appeared to us. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and the Son, Jesus Christ. He could speak with authority because he had heard, he had saw, he had touched Jesus. He was the proof against a rising problem in the early church. The problem was that in the church at that point, there was those people going around saying, well, actually, Jesus, he's divine. He didn't actually come and be human. He wasn't human. He appeared human. He looked human. But really, he was just, he wasn't actually human. Well, John was the one who could say, I heard him, I saw him, I touched him. I know he was human. The big claim of that period was that Jesus hadn't come in the flesh, but he only appeared it. So John wants to give the churches a way to test what's being said. He was probably speaking to the elders of the church to check out the travelling preachers, because if you imagine that the churches were scattered all around, they didn't have very good communication, so they had this way of testing. When someone came in and said, I'm a travelling preacher, let me hit your church, they would allow some tests to happen first. And this is 1 John chapter 4 verses 2 to 3. This is how you'll recognise the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus has come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming, and even now is already in the world. You see, the Spirit of God is not going to reveal something that is completely against the truth which was passed down to them. If a person claims to have a spirit revealed to them something, then they were to test it out. If there was a spirit came and revealed to someone that Jesus hadn't come into the flesh, then you know they're going to be a false teacher, that they are Antichrist, that this teaching was the Antichrist. And John understood that there'd be many Antichrists from maybe 70 AD when this letter was written to today. But some people have understood this to mean that if you're speaking, if a spirit reveals himself to you, that you simply ask this question: did Jesus come in the flesh? I don't think that's what's been meant here. I mean, how easy would it be for an evil spirit to know the right answer? Like, so if an evil spirit gets asked, did Jesus come in the flesh? He's going to say, yes. 2 Corinthians 11:13. Talks about this very issue. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It's not surprising then if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness, their end will be what their actions deserve. So Satan here can masquerade as an angel of light. People have taken this particular circumstance this letter was written in and tried to apply it everywhere. John is saying test the spirits by checking the claims of the apostles. Today you and I have the apostles' writings in the New Testament. So John is encouraging, test anyone who claims to have heard from a spirit. Test them with the truth that's been revealed to us by the apostles. So the question may be, for some people today, the question needs to be asked: did Jesus die on the cross? Or did Jesus rise again? Or did Jesus deal with sin when he died on the cross? Will Jesus come back? It's more than just one question. I think John's just talking about this one specific case. But when we test people, who come and say, oh, I've had a revelation from God, okay, lay it before us. Is it in line with the scriptures that we have? In verse 3, John says, but every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus, he's referring to the last verse. So any spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus come in the flesh, then these people are going to be from the spirit of the Antichrist. The question we need to ask constantly is, does this truth correspond with the gospel message? There may be things that you hear, there may be things that you think, and you'd like to get them checked out. That's what the eldership is here for. If you hear something, or if you start thinking something and you want to check it out, lay it before the elders. It's a wonderful thing to do. You'd never be judged, you'd never be criticised for it. So this 1 John 4 is a very good passage to consider when thinking about Islam. Islam is based upon a revelation claiming to be from God, given to Muhammad. It's a relationship which denies the truth that sets out in the scriptures. It denies Jesus died on the cross. Islam does not believe Jesus died on the cross. It denies Jesus to be the only begotten Son. Denies Jesus is divine. The revelation, therefore, is not from God, but as John puts it, from the spirit of the Antichrist. So lastly, we're going to look at how to lovingly engage Muslims with the gospel message. There's an appropriate concern, this question, we are to do it lovingly. There is a sense where the gospel message will be offensive. Paul tells us that. It's not a loving or smart thing to do to be intentionally offensive. And people who go out of their way in God's name to be intentionally offensive, I think they disrespect what the scriptures tell us to do. More and more Muslim people are in our community, they're in our sports clubs, they're in our workplaces. I do think that sharing faith in relationship is the very best way to communicate the gospel. You could come here on a Thursday morning with mother's group, and there are Muslim people, there are Buddhist people, there are wide variety. Being in relationship with these people and sharing faith is by far the best way. Unfortunately, Muslim people have a very strong commitment to relationships and being hospitable, far more than us Aussies, eh? Far more. You might remember a few weeks back we spoke about how the Holy Spirit needs to work in a person's life for people to come to faith. It is no harder for God's Spirit to work on a person who is Muslim than a person who is not. But there is another ingredient. We need to share the gospel message. We need to cooperate with what God is doing. We have some common ground that we can talk about with Muslim people. I don't think we worship the same God, but we have the same concept of an all-powerful God. They have a concept of Jesus from the Quran. The Quran says a lot about Jesus. The Quran says that the Quran says that the Bible should be read by Muslim people. Today, their leaders say don't do that because they think we've corrupted the Bible. We've changed the Bible. But the Quran does talk about the New Testament, the Gospels called the Injil, and that it should be read by followers of Islam. But generally, I don't believe that there is any value in attacking a person's faith. There's no value in attacking or debating. I find if I debate something, it doesn't matter if I believe in it or not, I start trying to think about how to win points in my debate. I try to think about how to undermine the other person's argument. It's not a sharing of truth, it is simply how to win a debate. And people only work harder at trying to shoot holes in your argument. Most Muslim people do not understand Christian thinking because they get their information from the Quran and their religious leaders. Most Christians don't understand Muslim thinking because they get the information from the newspaper or people like me sitting talking to you about that. If you have a relationship with a Muslim person, you have the best opportunity to understand them, eh? Ask them questions. Build strong relationships. And you'll have many opportunities to share your faith with love and respect. Yesterday, I normally go on a run with Upendra. We finished our run and down the street was my neighbour, my back fence neighbour, I don't see very often because it's a back fence, doesn't have the same street. He's a Muslim guy. I asked him how his family was. Great way to start a conversation with him. How's your family? I knew his son was having some trouble. How's your son? My neighbour, he was the one who mentioned God first, not me. He was the one who mentioned God. We had a little chat about whether God changes a person's heart or a person has to change their heart and God helps. We agreed that a person should cooperate with God who changes a person's heart. My desire is to always leave a discussion with him open to talk next time. I don't want to offend him. I'm not seeking to offend, but I want to talk to him next time. And quite honestly, I've just been on a 50-minute run with Upendra, hot and sweaty, dying of thirst, wanting to sit down. The conversation went only a few minutes. But the hardest thing is not to talk to them about God, but to get the focus onto Jesus. And that's where we need to go. We need to get the focus on Jesus. Fortunately, you and I have a great advantage. We have the Spirit of God with us. God's Spirit is working in people's minds and hearts, ours and theirs. And I think in that street theology discussion we had with my neighbour, I think that if we cooperate with what God is doing, we'll be in a far better position to share the faith, our faith with Muslim people. But we do need to abandon some fears, don't we? Fears that are encouraged that Christians and Muslims should be enemies or should be afraid of each other. There is no need to be fearful. To show your love and respect of another person, no matter what their faith is, has got to be a godly response. You may have other questions, and feel free to, there's a box there, and write down your questions, and I hope that was helpful. But let me pray.